in the mood for Thai, but the kids want pizza again? Get both with the Wonder app, where you can mix and match as many restaurants as you'd like in one delivery. Order online or visit a dine-in location near you. Explore endless cuisine options from Greek to barbecue, all brought to you in 35 minutes or less. Get 50% off your first meal with code NJPOD. That's code NJPOD for 50% off your first order. Only on the Wonder app or wonder.com. Terms apply. See wonder.com/newcustomer for more.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Tributes continue to pour in from across the world for the late Queen Elizabeth II, who died yesterday after an unprecedented 70-year reign. For more reaction to the passing of the British monarch, I'm joined by the DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson. And Geoffrey, there's been a lot of talk about the role that she played in helping build rapprochement between Ireland and the UK in recent years, particularly after the peace process. She managed to navigate that very well, in that she built relationships south of the border, but didn't alienate the unionists north of the border.
I think that's absolutely right, Anton. And in fact, as a unionist and a passionate monarchist, I was deeply moved by the Queen's visit to the Republic of Ireland, by the way that she conducted herself, the language she used, and the message, the very powerful message that she brought of reconciliation. And I think when we look back on that visit in 2012 and what happened, it was a truly historic moment. And I think that it helped to lay to rest many of the ghosts that had cast their shadow over British-Irish relationships for centuries. And therefore, I think that she was pointing the way towards the reconciliation between our peoples that we want to see happening as the next stage in the peace process.
Had you concerns before that visit? Because obviously the diplomacy and the imagery around it was a very delicate, very narrow gap to thread, which we subsequently know she did so well. But would you have been concerned before it happened?
Well, of course, on such a moment as the Queen's visit, and with all the history attached to it, there was plenty of cause for concern in advance. And we know that, you know, for some it was politically sensitive. Sinn Féin and the Sinn Féin leadership decided not to take part in any of the events linked to the visit. And I think subsequently they came to realise that actually that was a mistake. And I think that encouraged them then to engage in further such events in the future. And we saw the following year Her Majesty the Queen meeting with Martin McGuinness, the then Deputy First Minister in Belfast. So, yes, there were concerns, but I think you're right. Those concerns were very quickly allayed, and Her Majesty the Queen demonstrated that, you know, it is possible to navigate your way through centuries of history with all the difficulties attached to that and still offer a message that points the way towards a shared future. But whilst acknowledging all of the difficulties and the challenges we've had in our shared history.
You describe yourself as a passionate monarchist. What do you see as the most significant aspects of her legacy?
I think that she brought great stability to the United Kingdom after the Second World War, following after her father, the late King George VI. The United Kingdom was going through a very difficult time rebuilding after the war. And I think that through those years and beyond, and even during the 30 years of our troubles in Northern Ireland, she was a constant. And my generation have never known anyone else as our head of state. She's been there for all of my lifetime. And so I suppose at this moment, it is about reflecting on that past and someone who you know, has such great respect for Her Majesty the Queen. We also now think of what it will mean to have a king on the throne, King Charles III. We're looking to what the future might mean in his reign. So, you know, I have very fond memories of meeting Her Majesty the Queen on many, many occasions. I always found her to be someone who put people at ease. She was so easy to engage with, and despite the high office that she held, she was someone that people could relate to from all backgrounds. I remember being at events in Hillsborough Castle in my constituency and watching school children from all kinds of backgrounds, from unionists, nationalists, Catholic and Protestant backgrounds, and being so pleased to meet the Queen and feeling very much at ease in her presence.
The reports of those who have met her said that she had a great capacity to be funny as well.
She had a great sense of humour, and I remember attending my first meeting of the Privy Council when I was appointed a member of the Privy Council. And for your listeners, forgive this boring explanation, but the Privy Council is the Council of State. It's a legislative council that advises the head of state of the United Kingdom. I was appointed to that in 2007. I was very nervous about attending my first Privy Council meeting. But she very quickly put me at ease, put my colleagues at ease, and shared a joke or two. Her sense of humour was just wonderful. She loved to have a laugh. You could see that on so many public occasions that she attended. And many of the photographs that have been displayed over the last 24 hours have been one of you know, times of joy and happiness, not least with her family. Her family were so hugely important to her. And of course, we know that that family was impacted with the loss of Earl Mountbatten, who was one of many victims during the Troubles. And so she understood what it meant to lose someone. She understood and could empathise with people of all traditions on this island who'd suffered that deep sense of loss as a result of the violence that visited our island for 30 long years.
We're seeing images of outpourings of grief and support across Britain. The flowers being laid outside Balmoral. There are people gathering, a lot of them choosing to wear black, people gathering outside Buckingham Palace. And we're obviously at the beginning of what will be a relatively extended period of mourning. What's your expectation and what's your hope in relation to how that mourning is handled in the six counties?
Well, can I just say, first of all, I've been greatly encouraged and indeed inspired by many messages I've received personally in the last 24 hours from people all over the Republic of Ireland. I've had messages from Dublin, from some of your leading politicians, but from ordinary people, from County Westmeath, from Cork, and many other parts of the island. So I don't think this is something that is distinct and unique to Northern Ireland. I think that the sense of loss, this moment of history, is being felt across the island, actually, and that's reflected in the messages that I've been receiving. In Northern Ireland, I'm in Royal Hillsborough, in my constituency. Within minutes of the announcement last evening, people were gathering at the gates of Hillsborough Castle, laying floral tributes and just reading some of those tributes. They were very powerful, very emotional messages of respect for someone that was held in such high esteem by many. But as I've said, I don't think that will just be something that will apply to those of us who live in Northern Ireland. I think there are many in the Republic of Ireland who will share in the sense of loss and in recognition of this historic moment and reflecting on the life of a remarkable woman.
Geoffrey Donaldson, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning. That is the DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson. We're joined as well by Stephen Pound, MP, who himself had met the Queen a number of times. And Stephen, can I pick up on that thing that Geoffrey Donaldson spoke about in relation to the diplomacy and the subtlety of her actions on that visit that was so significant in the continuing of the peace process? She planned that very carefully and took advice from Tony Blair in respect particularly of the apology in relation to the famine.
Indeed she did. And she played it very, very well indeed. I think it was an extraordinary... Don't forget, this goes back quite a long time. Mary Robinson, when she was president, initially invited it. It was Mary McAleese who made the formal invitation. And in that 3 or 4 day visit to Dublin and to Cork and obviously to the stud down in Kildare, you know, she absolutely played it perfectly. But her involvement actually goes back earlier than that. When Tony Blair became British Prime Minister in 1997, he wanted to formally acknowledge Britain's role in the famine and to apologise for that. Now, he obviously consulted with the Queen at great length, and we now know that she gave him his blessing and said that it should be done. So it was a very, very sensitive thing. Also, when she went to Dublin, don't forget, she didn't just visit Croke Park, she visited the Garden of Remembrance. You know, she... And the, you know, the speech she made, using some Irish on the occasion, was very, very sensitive and very subtle. And I think it's interesting to see that there are people in, and I think as Geoffrey Donaldson said, right the way across the island of Ireland, expressing their sadness. And I think, you know, as we all know, grief is the price we pay for love. And I think, you know, there was love for Her Majesty, and there certainly was love from her to all of the people she met.
You mentioned, Stephen, her visit to, I think it was Coolmore Stud when she was over. And one of the things, of course, that was central to her life and one of her big pleasures was racing and was bloodstock and was the thoroughbred breeding. And according to those who would have met her and spoken to her about it, it was an area in which she was very expert. She knew her stuff.
Oh, absolutely so. I mean, to be honest, I mean, she went down to Tully and she stayed there much longer than was originally anticipated. I remember the ambassador, Julian King at the time, said, you know, how on earth are we going to get her away? Because there was a big concert that night. I remember Gay Byrne was going to come bear it. It was going to be the chieftains and everybody like that. And it was very difficult to get her away from there. She also went to Kilcullen, as I recall, to the Giltown stud. And, you know, people often said that, you know, if ever we'd had a revolution in this country and the Queen and everybody was turfed out, she could make a very, very good living from the turf. She certainly knew her horse flesh. And I think that was one of the points where, you know, she and Ireland came together.
I mentioned in the introduction that you had met her a number of times personally. What's your recollection of your interaction with her, and what was she like when some of the trappings were removed and you got to talk personally?
Well, to be honest, I was just an ordinary MP. I mean, I was Shadow Minister of State in Northern Ireland for quite a long time, for, you know, over 10 years. And so I did meet her in Geoffrey's constituency in Hillsborough a few times. I can still remember a pouring, wet, rainy day with her just walking. And I don't know how she managed it. She seemed to bring the sunshine with her when she was walking through those wet fields, you know, with her heels sinking into the ground without ever losing an iota of dignity. But when I actually met her, you know, there's a kind of protocol. When you first get elected as an MP, you get invited to a garden party, which is, you know, sort of a fairly low-key thing with iced coffee and cucumber sandwiches. And you then get invited to the ground floor of Buckingham Palace if you behave yourself. And then a few years later, you get invited to the picture gallery, the Royal Gallery upstairs, where they serve wine. And that was more of an interesting discussion. I mean, I made the dreadful mistake, it's sort of force of habit. The Queen came towards me and she was talking to me and she had a wine glass in her hand. And I asked if she'd like a top-up. And she said, it's just force of habit. You know, you see somebody with a wine glass at a party. And she said, no. She holds her hand just so that people who think she shouldn't be drinking can't see the wine. And people who think she should be drinking think she's got the wine in there. And she gave a real little chuckle. And I said, you know, look at these paintings around you, these Rembrandts and Da Vincis and Van Eycks and Van Dykes. You know, and you've got half a dozen members of Parliament here. Aren't you a little bit worried that, you know, some of them, you know, might actually take a shine to them? And she said, oh, you know, that's what Philip always says, but don't worry, you are my members of Parliament. I mean, God love her, she was an absolute sweetheart. But the first thing that hit you, of course, when you met her, was she was tiny. She's absolutely tiny. I mean, I'm 5'8", 5'9", not about 5'8", about the same height as Prince Philip. Now, everybody thinks Prince Philip was very tall, but he wasn't. She was very, very tiny. What a dynamo, what magnetism that she had, and what energy she just spun off from that. But it was just the genuine sweetness. There was, she somehow navigated that very, very tricky path between a constitutional monarch and a monarch, you know, with a political power, because the House of Commons meets in her name. Every MP, we had to swear an oath of allegiance to her, her heirs and successor. But she never, ever got down and dirty, never got involved in the day-to-day politics. And I think one of the strains, one of the fissures which will actually affect the monarchy in the future will be the role of King Charles, whether he's able to step back from his very, very active involvement in day-to-day politics. I rather hope he, in all things, follows the example of his mother, who was the exemplar of a constitutional monarch. And we don't actually, at this stage, look at the possibility of a ceremonial monarch as we have in Sweden and the Netherlands. But I think that if Prince Charles proves to be an interventionist monarch, sorry, King Charles, an interventionist monarch, then I think there will be a groundswell of opinion to say that maybe the monarchy in which everything comes from the Queen, politically, socially, economically, etc., maybe that's had its day. I think countries like Australia may well look at leaving the Commonwealth. But let's think about that for the future. At the moment, let's just be, you know, thanks be to God for an incredible woman, an amazing life, and the absolute duty and the loyalty and the fealty that she showed to her people. She vowed to be faithful to her people when she became Queen. She kept that vow till the last breath of her life.
Stephen Pound, thank you very much. That is Stephen Pound, who is former MP for Ealing and, of course, former Shadow Northern Ireland Secretary. Mally Coyne, psychotherapist, is with us as well. Mally, in terms of the role that she had in relation to the children and in relation to the wider monarchy, there was a huge responsibility to inculcate in them, particularly to inculcate in Charles, that same standards of duty and obligation to the role of monarch. Do you think she did it well?
I think she really did, Anton. I think she was the kind of the perfect role model for duty and doing what the country needed her to do at the time, from the time she gave that speech when she was a young girl, when the country was at war, to all the later engagements and everything else she did for the rest of the UK and the whole world. I mean, I think the fact that she's such a loved woman, not just in the UK and outside, I think people really respect her for that. And I think she would have instilled a sense of loyalty, duty in her children and in King Charles.
And what must it have been like to live a life of such constant scrutiny? Because from her mid-20s through until her passing, every single aspect of what she did had meaning, even down to things like what brooch she chose to wear. She would know this will be scrutinised and questioned and inferences will be drawn. That has to be a very taxing thing to live with for 70 years.
Yeah, I don't know how she did it. I mean, obviously, you know, she's born into this life, but she didn't realize that obviously she would become a queen or that her father would take on that role. But I think it would have been enormously taxing. So I think the support she obviously got from her close relationship with her husband and from those around her would have really helped her in doing that. But somehow she just had this kind of calm determination. You know, this is my duty. This is what I've been born into. And she had warmth about her as well. I mean, I've heard of people saying that they thought she was going to be very cold when they met her, very kind of proper and unable to have to show warmth. But that's not the case at all. You know, when she came to Ireland, we all fell in love with her again, you know. So I think it's probably been incredibly hard, particularly with all the tensions that have gone on in their family over particularly recently, but for many years, how she's tried to navigate that. I think I can't imagine how difficult that must be.
Well, as you talk about that surprising warmth that people say she had in person, Noel Cunningham is with us. He, of course, ambassador for the Harvey's Point Hotel in Donegal. And Noel met Queen Elizabeth on a number of occasions. Do you remember the first time, Noel?
Yes, I do indeed. It was rather fun because I had gone over to the Channel Islands and I was in Guernsey. And I was kind of arrested because they were observing this man with an Irish accent. Those were the days, remember, with a suitcase in hand. I was waiting for the ferry over to Sark, the boat that went over to Sark, and I was called in by Special Branch for an interview. I was to meet Her Majesty the Queen the next day when she visited the island of Sark. And she noted my accent and said, "Oh, you're certainly not from the Channel Islands or indeed Great Britain." I said, "No, ma'am." I said, "I'm Irish." And I said, "And let me tell you," I said, "my accent got me into trouble. I said, I was kind of arrested last night. They thought I was a person of bad intent." She giggled. And I had a similar situation with them at Royal Ascot when the Queen Mother told me to put a bet on a horse because I happened to be in the royal enclosure in the paddock at that particular time. And when her car was called later with the Queen Mother, they were going off to Windsor Castle for Prince Andrew's pre-wedding dinner. And the Queen Mother spotted me in the car with the Queen, and she put down the window and she said, "Well," and I said, "Well, ma'am." She said, "The horse is still running, I gather." And the Queen burst out laughing and she said, "Sir, never take a bet on a horse from my mother." You know, she was just at her best when she was relaxed, and certainly at the Convention Centre in Dublin on that memorable visit, she was most relaxed, at her best. And God, we all marvelled even when she arrived. And bear in mind, she'd been really, really carrying out a very tight programme of engagements. She walked ramrod straight up several flights of steps with that beaming smile. And, you know, listening to all of your contributors, that motto that she had and that she forever practised and preached: never explain, never complain, get on with the job. And in a world that's pretty bereft of what I call people of stature, people of good moral fibre and backbone and sort of commitment to whatever they're doing, the Queen stood out. I really do think that she is one of the most significant people of the last 100 years. She saw them all come, she saw them all go, she met every Prime Minister, every President, every King, every Queen, and member of the public. And that was her gift. When she travelled, she talked to people. If you had the privilege of meeting her, she looked at you, she was interested in you for that few seconds.
Is that the case, Noel? Because you see the pictures, I mean, the sort of the defining pictures of Queen Elizabeth II is usually one of her shaking hands with either a celebrity or a dignitary or a member of the public. And you always wonder, is she going through the motions very politely and with great dignity, or is there a genuine interest there in the person? You say there is.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. And remember, a lot of those sort of what we see on television, maybe after a royal sort of command performance or such like, that kind of formality has to be engaged in, and because they have to move along rather quickly and whatever. But in a more relaxed situation or on a walkabout, when she travelled, you know, when she sort of travelled to the Commonwealth countries, her walkabouts were legendary. She would talk to so many. Those were the aspects of her life that we didn't see on screen. And the funny thing, I have to say this as well, talking about all the political things that were said there, and certainly the most significant for me when she was in Ireland was at Dublin Castle, when she said in so many words, "There are aspects of our shared history that we're not proud of, that we would have liked not to have happened, basically, but we sort of have to accept and move on." And it was very, very, very poignant and very true. And Prince Charles, I had the great honour, we spoke on that morning in Donegal, you and I, when I was waiting to greet them and welcome them to Donegal. As we chatted and walked along, Prince Charles said that it had always been his mother, the Queen's dearest wish, that she would travel and visit the Republic of Ireland. And that statement was made with such sincerity. And I absolutely believe that, because Her Majesty was exemplary when she was in Ireland. And healing comes in different ways. And I think that with those sort of very, very few words, as Gaelica, when she went to the Garden of Remembrance, I believe above all else that people saw a certain sincerity and a genuine sort of for want of a better word, regret that our shared history was so turbulent, but rays of hope that we were moving toward a relationship between our two countries that would flourish in the future. An extraordinary woman. I have the greatest respect for her. I watched her for the last 50, 60 years. When you think she's been on the world stage, her first prime minister was Winston Churchill. She received her last prime minister just a few days ago.
Indeed, across a 70-year period in the public eye, remarkable history.
Absolutely.
Noel, thank you so much for coming on. Lovely as always to talk to you. That is Noel Cunningham there sharing his own personal experiences of interaction with Queen Elizabeth over the years, and Noel being ambassador for the Harvey's Point Hotel in Donegal. Mally, just to go back to you, the one aspect, Noel there mentioned Prince Charles and him talking about his mother's desire to visit the Republic of Ireland. On the family front, that of course was the other big challenge, because while she is head of state, she's also head of the family firm, as they refer to it. How well did she navigate that? Because as a family, they threw up some challenges to her.
I think it would have been incredibly difficult, especially in the last few years. But even when you think of, I mean, there's been many kind of dramas over the last, I don't know, 30 years, even going so far, even further back. And I think every family goes through its challenges and has skeletons in their closet. Unfortunately, it's not in their closet when it belongs to the royal family, and these things are very public and open. And then when you have the stress of having to fulfill certain duties and you've different personalities, I think it's been really difficult for her to try to navigate that. I do think she has tried to, you know, kind of hold tight and be respectful in a, you know, publicly anyway, you know, when that whole interview happened with Oprah Winfrey, say, with Harry and Meghan, you know, she was trying to be respectful and say we still very much welcome them in the family. And I think there was a nice moment there where she got to meet her great-grandchild. And I think that, you know, Lilibet, who's named after her, I think that was really important that happened a few months ago. And I'm really hoping that King Charles now will, you know, take on the baton and try to mend and some of these wounds that have happened. But I think she did an amazing job in trying to kind of heal things. But I don't think it was an easy job for her to do, because you have people and adults with completely different and opposing points of view. You know, we have the rift between Harry and his brother. So it's I think it's been really hard for her, to be honest.
Indeed. Well, Mally Coyne, thank you so much. There's Mally Coyne, who is a psychotherapist.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
In the mood for Thai, but the kids want pizza again? Get both with the Wonder app, where you can mix and match as many restaurants as you'd like in one delivery. Order online or visit a dine-in location near you. Explore endless cuisine options from Greek to barbecue, all brought to you in 35 minutes or less. Get 50% off your first meal with code NJPOD. That's code NJPOD for 50% off your first order. Only on the Wonder app or wonder.com. Terms apply. See wonder.com/newcustomer for more.